As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi everybody and welcome to The Ruck, our weekly podcast for The Times and Sunday Times. It is an incredible time for rugby if you look around. Huge outside investment coming in, massive new international series and international tournaments are mooted and popular with some, popular with others. World Rugby is trying to modernise itself so that the hoary old nations don't dominate as much as they used to. It is all happening. And in the Six Nations, TV audiences are really, really strong for what has been possibly not the classiest ever, but certainly not the worst, but has been just so full of emotion, upsets and tall poppies being downed. Wales, we're going to ask today, are they really Grand Slammers? And how much credence do we give to England and Ireland on the weekend? They both played extremely well, but the opposition wasn't that great. We've got a top-level panel today. Owen Slott, famous for his recent victory in the Rugby Writer of the Year, the UK Rugby Writer of the Year Awards. I was second, but who wants to be the bridegroom when you can become an usher? Slotty, I've finally got the home addresses of all the judges. I know where they live. I'm not in the least bitter that you've interrupted my run of 37 consecutive victories. But all I can say is congratulations, and I'll be on your coattails for the whole season.
Is that what you were referring to, Jonesy, when you said tall poppies have been down?
Exactly, yeah. So, that could refer to me. Lawrence Dallaglio, we just heard from. Lawrence, I think I'll spare his blushes by saying typically of him, he's gone from being the greatest, one of the most dominant figures in the game in England, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, number eight they've ever had, to being an outstanding TV summariser. I think I put him up there with Michael Leiner as the man you must listen to before you go and have the cup of tea whenever the break in the game goes. Lawrence has made the news pages yesterday. Dallaglio Rugby Works is an absolutely amazing creation of Lawrence and his lieutenants. It's not one of those things where you climb up a small mountain and get £2.50 sponsorship. This is an absolute global charity. And Lawrence was explaining that it's basically to catch the children who get excluded from school and could be really going down a dark path. And the way you put this together, Lawrence, is absolutely epic. But it seems to have taken over part of your life as well.
Yeah, listen, just very quickly. I mean, rugby obviously was a huge part of my life, still is. And I felt a responsibility and a duty to give something back. So I set up Rugby Works quite a few years ago, and we work with disadvantaged young kids in this environment that have been excluded or expelled from mainstream education. And we effectively use the values of rugby around sportsmanship, teamwork, you know, all the things that we know work so, so well to help these young people, boys and girls, turn their lives around and ultimately get them into full-time education or employment. And, you know, it started small, but like most things, it's now scaling. We're working in over 75 pupil referral units across the country. We're working with about 20% of the entire excluded population. Unfortunately, just to throw a few numbers at you, 12 young people every day are excluded from school. And 65% of them end up in prison. So, you know, we need to do something about it. Rugby has got the ability to really capture people's imagination and give them the support system that they need to really help turn their lives around. So a lot of this wave of crime that we're seeing now is, you know, can be attributed to those young kids that the society has really given up on. So
the knife crime.
Yeah, the knife crime. So rugby has got is one way back into mainstream society. And listen, I'm going to keep on doing it because it's working. You know, over 70% of the young kids that go through the program end up in sustained employment and education, and that's got to be a good thing.
Nancy, it's so big. Is it now? Have you got an ability to actually link up with official government agencies on this? Because everyone is desperate for people. Was it, you know, four people in the London area were stabbed last week?
Well, I mean, listen, it's not the only reason, you know, but certainly if less young people are excluded from mainstream, then that would help. Obviously, there's been police cuts. There's a whole raft of reasons. But what we need to do is look at the things that can rehabilitate and support. And a programme like Rugby Works is certainly one of many that could help that, you know, help the situation. And as I said, we're here to try and do that.
Rugby Works, if you look up Delalio Rugby Works on the internet, and keep in mind their motto, be part of a team, not a gang. It really is worth looking at and reading and supporting. And I read it all cover to cover last night. I have to say, some of it brought a tear to my eye. Owen, it's going back to a sporting front and the subject of tears in the eyes. You said this morning in your first paragraph, you didn't beat about the bush. You said Saturday at Twickenham, England, Italy, was flat track bullying, which it's difficult to argue with. Is that hard on England in that we're almost discounting all the evidence we got from the game?
I thought about that a fair bit when I said flat track bullying, because that suggests that you're limited to only being able to thump a weaker enemy. So I just think when England play Italy, it can look like that. Now, I'm not saying that England can only manage victories like that. I do think that you go away from those England victories over Italy, as we have done year after year, and you go, oh, this was great, that was great, Manu was great, Kokonasinga was great, and the perspective that you put those judgments into is nowhere really, because the opposition just aren't good enough, and I think that's very sad. And it's easy to criticise Italy and go, oh, they're rubbish, or they should be relegated. I mean, it's really, really sad that the whole Italian project doesn't seem to have worked thus far, and who knows what's going to happen. But you know, Manu looked great on Saturday, but how many of his tries were really well-worked rugby tries, and how many of them were, or how many of his best moments were well-worked rugby moments, and how many were tackles that really a tier one nation should have stopped? Well, a tier one nation should have stopped him.
Lawrence, I was going to say Italy's in your heart, but Italy's in your blood.
Yeah, I'm half Italian. More Italian than I'm English.
There's you, your dad, and you took your son on Saturday.
Yeah.
I understand he supports England.
Yeah.
At least my sons have stuck with the country of their birth. But there we are. Is it difficult? Even he probably wanted Italy to do better than that.
Yeah. I think we all do. And as I said, you know, I captained England in the first ever game against Italy in the Six Nations, and we won by 85 points. But then steadily they got better and better, and we had some really tough games against Italy. But whatever has happened in terms of the investment in the infrastructure of Italian rugby, you know, and whichever coach they brought in over the last two decades, results have not got that much better. You know, it's sad to say that they've in nearly 20 years they've only won twice away from home, and in nearly 100 games of Six Nations rugby they've only actually won 12, and those 12 were a long time ago. So you know, this is a results driven business, and therefore when you look at that set of results you think to yourself, well, you know, there's a big argument to suggest that it should Italy be there. But they are better than Georgia. They beat Georgia last year in Florence, and therefore, you know, there's an argument to say they do deserve to be there. But what we're seeing, unfortunately, is the gap between the bottom of the Six Nations, which is very much Italy, and the top, which, you know, rotates on a yearly basis, but is technically, fitness, tactically, and in every way, England were vastly superior. And I think the problem you probably had is that because this was Italy's fourth game in the space of 6 weeks, you know, that starts to take its toll as well. Yeah. And you know, they put up a pretty strong fight in the first couple of games. You know, against Ireland, they were winning at half time and looking pretty strong. But, you know, 31-7. And what it did is it created a very subdued atmosphere at Twickenham, where people were turning on their mobile phones and you know, having it was this sort of new Mexican wave of torchlight, I think, just because they were bored out of their minds because the game was a contest. And I agree with Owen that, you know, what did Eddie Jones learn about England? Well, he still learnt that they switch off for 10 or 15 minutes every game. But I think he did. He learnt that the Tuilagi Bentio partnership, you know, is not the partnership to take England forward. He learnt that Thok and Asinga is harder to tackle than it is to pronounce. and I think he learnt a few other things. And, you know, interestingly, when his post-match interview, he looked a bit irritated, which is not unlike Eddie, but he also admitted that he made some mistakes in terms of the substitutions that he made in Cardiff, and he gave, you know, Dan Robson a bit more game time, which he's going to need, because there's only a couple more competitive games for England between now and the World Cup, and I think every minute on the field, whether it's against Italy, New Zealand, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, is absolutely crucial.
So, Lawrence, one of the things that I find amazing about Italy, and I've sort of asked this question almost every year, you see these people, players like Sergio Parisse is the clearest one, but there's a lot of players there with 100 caps, a lot of experience, and they keep on coming back for more. Every Six Nations, they're always plucky and full of character at the start. Why do these players not just hang up their boots and go, listen, I've done my best for this country, it's someone else's turn? They just keep coming in and coming in. I mean, they aren't that as effective on the pitch as we'd like, but there's an extraordinary sort of character personality thing going on there that makes them keep on coming back and trying.
Yeah,
I know they get paid for it, obviously.
No, but rugby, you're right, rugby's very tough, and you know, it's tough when you're winning, but if you're losing, it's just, you know, it's even worse, and I can't imagine that. I mean, I have to tell you that I would really question what I was doing if I was losing every single week. What's the point in keep coming back for more just to get absolutely smashed to bits? And that's the thing about Italy. They may have the worst rugby team, but they've definitely got the best anthem of and, yeah. And you know, and what I'd expect from an Italian side is tears running down their eyes, and at least for the first 20 minutes that they absolutely tear into England, because rugby, as technically or as tactically naive as you need to be, is still a game about emotion, and I was expecting a lot more from Italy emotionally. And maybe, you know, the fact that they're constantly losing every week, they don't even have that. But in the days of Troncon and you know, Giovanelli, you know, you always knew you were going to be in a battle in the first 20 minutes. And if you take that away from rugby, then, you know, you're going to get pulverised, really.
Snotty, Lawrence touched on the midfield there. Just ask one more question. We have to go on to Wales because the Welsh fans are going to be reminding us that they're up for the Grand Slam and nobody else. But Henry Slade, I think, has played some delightful stuff this year in competitive games. Lawrence was saying that he doesn't think that the Teo Tuilagi combination is really a combination together. It excludes Slade. Where do you stand on that? Is it just smash, 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 or should Slade be in?
Well, I don't think that of all the people who really shone on Saturday, Teo wasn't one of them. Though maybe the part of it was there appeared to be space for Manu Tuilagi, so Teo was obviously soaking up quite a bit of the defence himself, so he was doing some work there. Manu definitely looks better as a 13 than a 12, where he's a little half a yard further away from the action. There's likely to be a bit more space, and I think he's more likely to find his way into space with some really clever passes inside him, as opposed to a big bash job. So, but if you went back 2 years, I was always thinking if it wasn't going to be the Ford Farrell combination, which I still think is brilliantly effective and could work really well for him, I always wanted to see more of Farrell at 10 and Henry Slade at 12, because Henry Slade for me has got everything that a 12 requires. He can carry and take it up. He has got a boot. He is a former 10, so he sees and reads the game amazingly. He's got a very good passing game. He just seems to do everything there. And I'm sure it's too late for that to be tried. And it was briefly flicked at a year and a half ago by Eddie, and then switched off. So I do prefer Slade there, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see Teo again there. I'm not sure if that's sort of. I agree. It wasn't. Wow. This is the future. We've sussed it. But I'm sure we'll see it again.
Owen, you know, there's no reason why, and I'm sure Eddie Jones will go back to picking Slade and Tuilagi. But there's no reason why they can't swap positions. I mean, you know, during the game.
Anyway.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, Tuilagi will have more success in the wide channels. You know, Slade has got a wonderful kicking game at second receiver, which is what you need. He also can step in at first receiver, and it's everything that we knew 20 years ago when the likes of Mike Catt and Johnny Wilkinson used to play together. And so, you know, I think that will be the combination next week. But at times, I'd like to see, you know, Tuilagi standing at 13, and at other times, you know, Stan Slade at 12.
We must now move on to the Division 1 of the Six Nations Championship. Wales are going for the Grand Slam in a bizarre season for them. Saturday at in Murrayfield. One word for the Welsh fans, you know, the number of fans who go to games because of the ridiculous hotel costs and the way the Six Nations has been truncated has really been slashed over the years. But there were thousands of Welsh people up there, and good on them, because economy is not at the greatest there, and there was the usual rip-off, so it was nice to see so many fans, but and a real fans' game. But Wales were bizarre. They are completely dominant, and their defence continued to be, but they did fall off rapidly. The line-out wasn't very good. You know, the great players, Jonathan Davis, Alan Wynne-Jones and Gareth Davis, were tremendous. Elsewhere, I think Warren Gatland said they haven't hit their straps, and they certainly, if they have, you know, they didn't hit their straps on Saturday. Lawrence, do you feel that Wales are a Grand Slam team in the making or in being?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Wales, before the tournament started, were a very good side. They were ranked number three in the world, just behind New Zealand and Ireland. And the reason we weren't discussing them as potential Grand Slam champions was because of the season that Ireland had just had before them. But I think for those of us that know Warren Gatland and know Wales, you know, before the tournament started, you looked at the fixture list and you thought, well, they've got the two toughest teams at home. If they can win that first game in France, you know, I felt, we felt, and Warren Gatland publicly said, you know, we will win this championship. And, you know, that's quite a ballsy statement to make. You know, we're going to win in France. If we win in France, we're going to win this tournament. And, you know, Warren always used to put a few things out there, and I used to say to him, well, it's all very well and good for you, but I've actually got to play at the weekend. thanks for that. But, you know, look, Wales deserve it. I mean, they've played superbly well in 40 minutes against England. But I mean, you know, sometimes it's the way it works. You know, they beat a very ordinary, they beat a less than ordinary French team, who just can't seem to win anything at the moment, can't win a raffle, let alone a game. And then, you know, they made all those changes against Italy, but that just shows you that you can do that and still win. And then, you know, they deserved to win at in Cardiff against England, because they changed the way that they were playing at half time, and they came out on top. And I thought, actually, at the weekend, I didn't see the whole game, but I did see the last 30 minutes, and what a defensive masterclass. You know, because they basically didn't have the ball, did they, against Scotland for 30 minutes, and they've showed different ways of playing. Against England, they had to come from behind and rethink the way that they were playing, and against Scotland, they got out in front and they had to defend a lead. And so they've shown different ways of playing, and for that reason they deserve to be where they are.
Sure. Lawrence, just one more question, just a random question. Surely any club, the way that Sean Edwards is defending, any club would like to recruit him?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a number of clubs in the market for him. Wasps would love to have him back, I'm sure, because, you know, there's gaping holes in the Wasps defence at the moment. But Sean is more than just a defensive guru. He was branded a defence coach, but he was one of the greatest attacking players that Wigan ever had. So, you know, his understanding in terms of mentoring players, his ability as a defence coach, but it stands to reason that if you're a very good defence coach, surely you understand the things that an attack needs to do to unlock a good defence as well. So, yeah, I mean, there's no, you know, there's been rumoured that Wasps are speaking to him. He's currently, I think he'd already announced that he was, you know, going to Wigan next season. But I think that performance that he put in as defensive coach of Wales at the weekend, and indeed through the championship, has probably highlighted to everyone that his future should really be in rugby union.
Joe, you've seen all these, you've seen Grand Slams since, well, I don't know, 1980 or whatever. Do you think that, you saw Wales at the weekend, do you think that they are, if a member of the more English-based, England-based media has a temerity to suggest, as I think you're saying, has a temerity to suggest that they're not a real Grand Slam winning team, or they're not Grand Slammers, you put people's backs up immediately. They haven't been a brilliant attacking team. They've been a fantastic defensive team. But what's your view?
That's why I asked Lawrence. I don't think that they are an out-and-out Grand Slam team, no. I think it'll be really tight on Saturday. I think they've got to bring Dan Bigger in because he's a match winner. Jake Ball should be in. Thomas Francis has been an absolute diamond for them this year. Yeah. He's been outstanding. And the ref was letting Scotland collapse on the weekend. Liam Williams, I understand, is, well, they say, no, it's a stinger. It didn't look like a stinger to me when his arm was in plaster. But, no, I don't think, if they are a Grand Slam team, they haven't shown it in performance yet. But that doesn't mean at Cardiff on Saturday, everybody knows what it's going to be like. It's going to be like a blizzard of emotions. So just before we go off this subject, let me ask, we know Lawrence has been on record about Gatland over the years. Is it not an astonishing achievement just to get where they are now, Owen, when every member of the team, of the squad, has been in a dismal rugby club, a dismal regional rugby team, two of which are almost bankrupt, one who's desperate to merge, and the other's been bought by the Welsh Rugby Union. And apparently when Corey Hill scored against England, it was almost the first time he'd won the game that year. None of the squad have won any matches. Isn't that the greatness of Gatland?
Yeah, well, there's many ways to express the greatness of Gatland, but that is generally one of them, to be able to pick up a bunch of players who you say are more used to losing than winning and compete, turn around. And they clearly go into that Welsh camp and they change into a Welsh shirt and it's a completely new outfit, a completely new state of mind, and it's a shame they can't take that back into their regions. But that's another very long conversation, which maybe we're not going to have now.
Okay, let's just have one word from Lawrence on France. One word from you on Ireland, Slotty. Lawrence, you'd say you'd be cursing if you're an Italian player. You wouldn't be too happy if you're in the French side, would you?
They're useless at the moment, utterly useless.
I think you've been kind.
There's no, I mean, I can't really describe. It's the first time in over 70 fixtures that they actually announced the same 15, you know, they. I've had enough of putting up excuses for French rugby because you know, but. There's so many good players in France for those of us who spent years trying to win in the south of France. You know, there's so many good players, but they don't half, you know, tie their hands behind their back. I think there's a real issue with the structure of French rugby. You know, any player that's from Wales, Scotland, England, or France, or Ireland, that comes back having played French club rugby will tell you that the word professionalism is doesn't exist over there. They are not professional. And they don't train professionally. Their setup is not professional enough. You only got to look at the size of their players on the field to recognise that they're not. You know that the game is of international rugby is being played in a different way to the way that they're playing the game. And they're not going to move forward if they don't sort it out. So, you know, it's pretty sad. And you talk about Wales. Wales deserve to be where they are because they've won every game. Now they haven't played entertaining rugby. They haven't played the way that they know. But they've played winning rugby. But really, two of the sides, France and Italy, they were always going to win because they're so bad at the moment that you know you haven't actually got to play that well to win them.
Look, how do you take that on, Owen, looking at Ireland and Wales? Because as Lawrence said, France have got all sorts of problems.
But France have got to change their coach tomorrow, haven't they?
Yes, well, yesterday. But actually, there were just the odd sign of what Joe Schmidt called rhythm coming back to Ireland. And if they build on that, I think they'll still be deadly dangerous on the weekend. Or do you not think so?
Oh, I think Ireland will be. I think they'll play their best game of the championship by a long way. So they had their big disappointment against England, and they stuttered in their next two games, and they were much better at the weekend, albeit you know not completely purring. It was not long ago that they beat the All Blacks. Their players are doing so well in Europe. That hasn't just gone. It's there to be rediscovered. And I think because it's their last Six Nations game before the World Cup, they will be so desperate to finish on a high and try and get back to where they felt they were before. I think that's a really hard game to call. I think Wales, I would marginally have them to win that game, but player for player, I don't think they're better than Ireland. I think the whole emotion thing and the Gatland thing, his last ever Six Nations game in Cardiff, etc. It will be huge, and I think all that will probably just about sweep them to the
grandstand. But it's Joe Schmidt's last ever Six Nations game as well, and it's Rory Best's last ever Six Nations game. And I think,
all right, clever clogs.
We know, but we're going to learn a lot about. We're going to learn a lot about Ireland, is what I'm saying, because they are the second best side in the world. You know, they were absolutely, you know, smashed to pieces by England. It's not their confidence for a couple of games. They've regrouped. They're world-class players, world-class halfbacks, and, you know, if they don't win in Cardiff, what does it say about their chances, going towards the World Cup?
Well, if they don't win, then you do think, and they might well feel that they've kind of have sort of peaked and started going down the other side. And for all that sort of mentality and self-confidence stuff, I think it's going to be an amazing game.
Can I push you into one-word answer, guys? Who will be the Six Nations champions? I'll start, if you like. Six Nations champions on Saturday evening. I'll start with England.
So you think Wales will get beaten? I just think that the occasion will sweep Wales to victory. So my one-word answer is Wales will be.
I would agree with you. I'll say England.
And coming up, we'll be speaking to England's Sarah Hunter.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, as promised earlier, it's time to talk Women's Six Nations. England played Italy in front of 10,000 people at Sandy Park on Saturday and won and now in line for the Grand Slam. It's momentous stuff from all angles. And over now to Sarah Hunter, England's number 8 and captain. Sarah, the England number 8 and captain is supposed to take the field for a big game, as the Italy game was, with a grim expression, but the photographs of you coming on laughing all over your face. I just wonder whether that was in reaction to the amazing reaction that you got from the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. All week we've heard about how this crowd down at Sandy Park was growing and getting bigger, and you know that means a lot to us as players. And then I don't even quite comprehend it until you actually like run out. As we were warming up and as we came, you could sense it was building. But then, like as we ran out, like you just get the final sense of what the enormity of the occasion was and how many people had come down there. And like you can't help but smile at what that brought with it. And it was just a fantastic day to be part of, really.
In the if you're kind of London centric, you look at the venues this year, and one was Doncaster, and then the other one was Exeter. You think, blimey. You know, this is a fair way, but do you think the experiments of taking them to these grounds has now worked out with that amazing crowd at Sandy Park?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, I think obviously normally England rugby's played in and around London, and for us that has always been the case. But I think it was a really smart move to take us on the road, especially in terms of we need to expose our game to new audiences. We need to create a fan base. You know, we've had the diehard fans that come. We have our friends and family that have come game after game, year after year. But we're at a stage where if we're really going to kick on, we now need to generate that new fans. And certainly by going up to Doncaster, you know, what was a record-breaking crowd there at 4,500, you know, to come down to Sandy Park and to smash out the park really with 10,500 people there to watch is absolutely incredible. And hopefully we're generating this interest that wherever we take the game, whether that's back to London or whether that's somewhere else in England, then these fans will follow and support us.
Sarah, I'm just going to ask Lawrence you the same question as I'm about to ask Lawrence, because both the victories that the victory that England men and women got on the weekend was absolutely substantial. Lawrence, are we getting to a problem now in the Six Nations because Italy are just so far behind? They lost 21 on the trot, and we'll come back to Sarah about the women's team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that you know, it's worrying really, because you know, Italy have been involved in the Six Nations since 2000, so 18 years, and I think in the early days, you know, there was obviously a difficulty with the fixture, but then there was a period where they really started to get very, very close to some of the tier one nations, and you do feel that no matter what structure they've put in place or whoever's been coaching them, the gap has got wider and is getting wider. You know, they're producing decent results just below international level, but that doesn't seem to be making its way to the very top. And look, you know, when you're a player, you go out and play against whatever's in front of you. And you know, credit to Sarah and her team for the way that they handled that. And similarly to Owen Farrell and the team. But 31-7 at half time, you know, it created a very strange and subdued atmosphere at Twickenham, because what's been so wonderful about this tournament so far has been the unpredictability of some of the results. And, you know, what we had in the game against Italy was, you know, we all knew England were going to win. It was just a question of by how many. And, you know, even Eddie Jones, even Conor O'Shea has now perhaps called for or welcomed the opportunity of maybe relegation, just to provide that little bit of edge to his side.
Sarah, it was slightly different to you, because you weren't playing a really poor side. You were playing a team that was second in the division, and was actually had won some games and been very competitive. So surely there was also this element this time. It wasn't Italy being so terrible, but it was your team just playing out of its skin.
Yeah, I think certainly by no means Italy women's side are probably in a slightly different position to their men's side. You know, like you said, they were sitting second. They hadn't been beaten yet, and they've put in some really good performances. The Six Nations, they beat Ireland for the first time ever in their history, and likely to see them continue to improve. And it was no means an easy win for us on Saturday either. It was up until 30 minutes, it was only 7-0. So again, Italy proved a lot of problems for us to break down, and we probably just tried a bit too hard at times. But yeah, we reflected on that at half time and problem solved and probably just ran away with it in the second half. But, you know, similarly probably to the men 18 years ago, Italy women's team are now sort of there or thereabouts, and it'll be really interesting to see how they kick on over the next 2 years to really see whether they can challenge at that next level. But again, there's talk in the Women's Six Nations about whether there should be promotion or relegation. You've got a side like Spain that sits just outside of it, similar to Georgia, Romania, those teams in the men's world that are wanting to be in this competition. You know, year on year they play teams in the Six Nations League and beat them. So, you know, they're making a strong claim, and maybe it is time that we look at how this competition is running the modern rugby era, not how it has always been, and that probably should be put on the table for discussion, I think, and probably across both competitions.
You do want to be playing competitive games, Sarah. Now, Wales, to their credit, have now won a game away against Scotland, but there does seem to be a real two-division element to it. Are you slightly worried? I mean, it is your job to pull away every team you play against, but are you slightly worried that the gap is becoming yawning now and you may have to reconstruct the Six Nations in some way?
I think the teams this year it's been a case of what could almost be with some of the teams. Like Scotland fell really short in their games that they've played, and they put glimpses of real strong performances in, as have Wales, but they just haven't got that consistency, and probably that the time and the infrastructure that they would wish to have. And that's something for their governing body, similar to Ireland, to look at and see how they can best support their teams, because, you know, we've got fantastic backing off the RFU now, and you know, we're continually striving to be better and better, and you do want competitive games, and there's always an element in the game for whatever reason that makes it competitive. But when you want to be playing the best teams in the world, such as New Zealand, you need to be playing 80-minute matches that test you week in, week out. So I think for me, it's the home unions and nations to look at how they best support their sides now in terms of where we take the women's game next.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Sarah, people won't be worried about that when they come to support you on Saturday at Twickenham. They'll be wanting the Grand Slam, and then everything else will be by the by. So how do you keep your eye on the ball when you know that you're playing a team that you should beat by a lot of points?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. And it's something that we obviously have to look at ourselves and probably focus on our performance. You know, hopefully if we get our performance right, the result will take care of itself. And, you know, we now have to be looking at that next level of performance. And yes, Saturday against Italy was great, and we won by over 50 points and we didn't concede a try, but, you know, it wasn't a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination. I think we had over 20 unforced errors and unforced and probably uncharacteristic errors from our side that actually, you know, we can't afford to turn ball over that against a side like New Zealand or maybe a France that actually you might only get one or two chances and you have to take it. So we've got to look at our performance and sort of when we analyse and when we're playing, they go, well, would that be good enough to be the best team in the world and mm-hmm. to win World Cup? So, you know, we're really striving at that next level and challenging ourselves to be better and being quite tough on ourselves. But ultimately that hopefully will get us to be better and to learn out of these games. So actually when we get to hopefully World Cup finals, actually we're in a position to take those opportunities, which is something that we fell down in 2017. So
sure.
we really need to be asking ourselves, is that good enough to be the best team in the world and beat the best teams in the world?
Sarah, can I ask you finally why there was an astonishment in your voice when I asked a good question?
No, not at all. All your questions are good.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm just checking. Listen, everyone, all the Ruck listeners, everyone across the country, slightly starved of trophies lately, will be wishing you all the best and to the rest of the team, squad and coaches on Saturday. So England, Scotland, with Sarah Hunter as captain, hopefully will be going up for the Grand Slam. There's a lot of rugby to be played before that. But Sarah, good luck from everybody.
Thank you ever so much. Really appreciate that.
Well, just before we wind up, very important. You may have forgotten the Gallagher Premiership. It's been absolutely unbelievable since we were away. I really do think that international plays away far too often. Newcastle Falcons making a late, unbelievably late charge, scored last-minute penalty to win at Wasps. Poor Wasps, almost unrecognisable with their first team. Bristol, last-second try to win at Northampton. Northampton team, which finished with 11 players, four men in the bin. Just utter drama. Worcester just lost out to Exeter by one score at Worcester. Gloucester at Harlequins yesterday was one of the most amazing Gloucester performances I think I've ever seen, led by Danny Cipriani, inevitably, who was just magical. But they Gloucester look, I mean, they're bound to lose the next 10 games now. They look to me like they've won, that they've got something. Sale are now up to fifth, going like a bomb. But Saracens lost. It is an absolutely amazing Premiership, Lawrence.
Yeah, it is, and it always, you know, takes a bit of a back seat in terms of its profile when the internationals are on, and some of those players are obviously missing from various clubs. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, from my point of view, it's grim watching. Being a board member at Wasps, you know, 2 weeks running now, they had a try disallowed at Leicester Tigers in the last minute, slightly controversially, to lose the game, and then they give away a penalty again, slightly controversially, to lose the game. So, but that's the way it goes. Didn't see the Gloucester result coming because Quins have been the form team of the Gallagher Premiership, but. You know, it's amazing what you can do with Danny Cipriani in your team, without a doubt, as Wasps fans will tell you last season. So, you know, some amazing results. It gives a chance for some of those teams that want to push for the playoffs. You know, Exeter aren't quite as unbeatable as they have been when the Six Nations isn't on, and certainly Saracens have. That's a couple of games they've now lost while they've missed some of their best players.
So on the Cipriani thing. So I didn't see the whole game, but I've seen enough and seen enough clips to work out that he was rather good yesterday. So he put in a masterclass against Harlequins. Day after, Eddie Jones calls up a third number 10 to his England squad. And
he's not going to get picked for England.
The Harlequins number 10. It's not the Gloucester number 10. Yeah. I mean, well, it's hilarious.
Harlequins number 10 were terrible, both of them, with respect. Anyway, maybe Cipriani wasn't that good because in the Times report of the game, it didn't mention him. So...
Is that right?
I think the Times are just trying to change their tack. If they don't mention him, he might get picked.
Okay, finally, panel, thank you very much. Very, very good. But we have to name my god or goddess of the week. Sloddy?
I'm good to go. I've got a great team goddess of the week. Flo Eggins and Erica Loudon, the marketing girls at Exeter Chiefs. Hannah Sutherland, the ticketing manager at Exeter Chiefs. And most of the marketing department at the RFU, because they were largely responsible for getting over 10,000 people into that women's international at Exeter on Saturday. I mean, that looked absolutely amazing. That is a hell of an achievement. So they are my goddesses of the week.
So there's four goddesses of the week.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be the choir, but I mean, fair enough. Goddesses of the week. Just name them again so we all get them.
Flo Eggins.
Yes.
Erica Loudon.
Yes. Which of those two
Hannah
did the most, do you think?
Out of the three of them, I always thought Flo yeah. had a big game.
Hey, well done, everybody at Exeter Chiefs. Lawrence?
Well, other than the three mascots that walked out with Owen Farrell at the weekend, which brought a tear to my eye, yeah. I think the hero of the week really has to be Sean Edwards for that defensive masterclass that he got Wales to play, because, you know, I always used to find that the ball a bit of a distraction, but to watch them defend the way that they defended in that second half, you know, tells me why they've won 13 games on the bounce and why they're currently still unbeaten in this Six Nations Championship.
Mine would be a Welshman, be Alan Wynne-Jones, because not only did he play outstandingly well, and it almost reminded me of Lawrence, the way he was towering over the referee, and the referee was just about to go one way and he went the other way. He was astonishingly good. But also last week he had to take 2 days off to plead with the officials of the clubs and the regions and the Welsh Rugby Union, when he's meant to be promoting, or rather meant to be getting his team together, to beg them to get some sense into the regional rugby. Now, that he came across as a statesman of the game, and someone, the Ospreys and Wales are going to miss him badly when he went. That's the end of the ruck today. Got one more Six Nations to get through, chaps. Then we can go back to good old club rugby. But what a weekend it's going to be in Cardiff, in Rome, and at Twickenham. And we're 2-1 here in favour of England, but we've been wrong before. Thank you very much.
Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.